Welcome to the Rad Dad Redemption Podcast. Here's your hosts, Drew and Dex.
All right, we're back in the laboratory.
Stop.
Alicia sent me this reel today, and it was like this British lady, and she was like, I'm really loving this fruit, cantaloupe.
That was gonna say, is it a laboratory? Lubratory?
Lubratory.
You were in the lubratory.
Yeah, I'm in the lubratory.
Yeah, cantaloupe.
Anyway, welcome back.
Hey guys. Hey girls. Hey everybody.
How you been?
I've been good. I've been really good.
Yeah.
I had we both have had fantastic summers, but I also enjoy the like non-working summer. And so I've been really, really lapping it up these last couple. Knew it was coming to an end. So I've been pouring it on thick.
The light was at the end of the tunnel and you took advantage.
Yeah, I've been dumping that lube on the lubratory and just having an absolute time.
I know we've got a topic for this episode, but before we get to that, I want to tell you what I did this week.
Yeah, tell me.
I haven't been to the movie theater in like a long time.
Because why would you?
Right, exactly. Like, it's just not that great of experience. Well, actually, no, I'm turning around on that. But even the times previous I've been lately, it's always been to see like a kid's movie.
Yeah.
I've always gone with Kennedy. Last one was like Buzz Lightyear. Before that, it was like Encanto. Before that, it was like the Paw Patrol movie. I haven't been to the movie theater to see like a blockbuster.
An adult movie.
Hit. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, there hasn't been any. Do you go, is this, because I think as soon as I said movie theaters suck, I did think about the VIP experience, which is like,
there's a whole another story involving me and Cineplex as well.
Yeah. Like you, cause now you go in, you get a drink before you're like, bring me beer and nachos and I'm going to be passed out 20 minutes into this thing.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to make it through the previews. And that's a bit different. That's a bit more fun.
So I'm a Landmark man. I go to the Landmark cinema, but same idea.
What is that?
That's the one in Shaughnessy.
Like what do we like from back in the day, like that we always went to?
Like, I
by
think
chapters
it,
and shit?
It used to be a Cineplex, I think, for many years, but it got bought out by Landmark.
I wouldn't even pay attention to that thing. So Cineplex is like the big one in the southeast when you're going up the foot, and you're saying like the OG Odeon is now Landmark.
Landmark.
Okay, and, I'm with you.
And it's like self-serve. So you walk in, you buy your tickets online, as you do these days. You walk in, you can pick all your snacks and popcorn, and then you just pay. So you're not waiting in line with 1,000 people for like 4 employees to bag popcorn. There's like somebody in the back and they put it into like a glass. It's like at M&M meat shops where you can serve yourself.
Oh, no way.
And so it's really cool. And also the reason why I'm a Landmark man is my Cineplex story. I'm like banned from Cineplex, like owning Cineplex.
Like Pee Wee Herman band or like, oh yeah, rest in peace, by the way.
I'm allowed to go to a Cineplex, but the problem is I'm not allowed to have an account with them. And this goes back to like when I was working at TELUS when I was 19 in university. And TELUS was doing a promotion with Cineplex and Scene Points. And so customers that signed up for a new plan would get 5,000 Scene Points. And so we would ask them when they're signing up, do you have your Scene card? You get 5,000 Scene Points, which 1,000 Scene Points is a free movie ticket.
Oh, okay.
And so many people would be like, I don't have a Scene card. And instead of me being like, well, let's just throw these fucking 5,000 points into the ether, I'm like, I'll punch it in my own Scene card.
See, I'm glad this is going in a fraud direction. Because you're first like, I'm banned from that movie theater. You know what? Like, you know what? Dudes get banned from movie theaters.
You know what I did during the Paw Patrol movie? No. It was, it's fraud. Anyway.
Go on.
So I'm entering. And like, honestly, it was like 3 or 4 a day that they didn't have their Scene card or they didn't have a Scene card. They didn't give a shit. I would enter in my own Scene card. And by the end of this promotion, this summer promotion, I had amassed about 250,000 Scene Points.
No way.
Yeah. And what you can do with Scene Points,
you don't have to get movies. You can do the movies. You can get like credit like on your credit card and shit.
I was getting full on fucking $100 Swiss Chalet gift cards.
That's what you went for. Stop. No.
Yeah, because there was.
Hold on. I've got Scene, and I want the listeners who don't have Scene, because I'm sure you all have reward programs. There's like, you can get like cash deposited into your bank account. You can get flights. My man is stacking ribs and chicken. All right. He's going full Swiss.
To be fair, this is
which
like,
is a gross restaurant.
This is, I didn't know it is, but this is 2009. So the Scene program was not as advanced as it is today.
Okay.
And it was not affiliated with, you know, your Scotiabank Visa or whatever.
Swiss Chalet was as unadvanced. And if anyone's listening right now being like, oh, what? Chalet sauce? Fuck you. It's a gross restaurant.
Yeah. But you know what? So here's why we did it. me and my dude that had like come up with this scheme that I worked with at TELUS, the Swiss Chalet was right behind our store. And so we were basically
proximity.
Just like, we're having free lunches forever.
Yeah.
Okay. And so we're cashing it. And I took people to movies. Anytime I went, like somebody's like, oh, I want to go see this movie. I'm like, it's on me. They're like, really? I'm like, hell yeah. Like I got literally 250 free movies on this card right here.
All right, I'm with you.
And then eventually I got an email. It took him a few months, but it was like, your scene card has been canceled and all points revoked. Which I was like, ah, like it was fun while it lasted. I went to like 20 free movies.
But no extenuating circumstances.
No, that was it. They were just like, your scene card's been canceled. And so I was like, well, that's like probably how the best of that could have turned out for me. So, but anyway, now when I go punch in my name with Cineplex, I even tried to sign up under a different email, like a new one that I've never used. I only use it on my iPad.
Dax Dernford.
Yeah. And so I signed up and like moments later I got an email and it was like, you are ineligible for holding a scene card. Please contact customer service. And I was like, I know what this is about.
You criminal.
I know.
Yeah. That's unreal. That's so sick.
So anyway, I'm not allowed to have a scene card. So I'm not going to Cineplex. I'm stacking Landmark points.
So you can't go to VIP. So you go to the one
Landmark
in Shaughnessy.
Landmark has their own VIP though.
Okay. Yeah, what do they call it?
It's like Landmark VIP. Yeah.
I guess, yeah.
Or no, Landmark Elite or something. I don't know.
That's anyway, very dope.
You got the reclining seats, like the power reclining seats, and like it's dope. It's a nice experience. What I hear, similar to Cineplex VIP, I'd never fucking go into one of those shitholes. Anyway, so my wife and I, we go to Oppenheimer. We've got grandma in town watching Kennedy.
Yeah.
So she's like...
Nolan. I'm a big Nolan fan.
Yeah. So she's like, you know... If you guys want to go out for a movie or something, like kids are asleep, I got this. And I was like, so kids are asleep, it's like 9 o'clock. I was like, let's go to a 3-fucking-hour movie. We're going to Oppenheimer.
Bold move.
Yeah,
that's I'm with you now though, because like that movie, I haven't seen it, but it's because I was just shit talking theaters. But when I saw the preview for that, I was like, oh, that's VIP land, that's elite land, we gotta go see that.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
an event.
That's one of those ones. Yeah, you gotta go see it. So yeah. You know, we're a little late to the jump, like there was hardly anybody in the theater because everybody's already seen it. Blockbuster of the summer. But so we get there, movie starts at 9:40, so it's going to 12:40 in Calgary, and Alicia fell asleep a couple times during the movie. Those seats are pretty comfy, I'll give her that. But couple takeaways from like going to see like an adult movie at a movie theater. First of all, this may make me sound old and like crusty and just crotchety, but like movies are way too fucking loud.
Interesting.
Yeah. So like we're in there and anytime there's an explosion, which of course it's a movie about the invention of the nuclear bomb.
There's an explosion or two.
There's a few, right? And they're like testing different detonation devices and stuff. No spoilers coming up if you haven't seen Oppenheimer. I'm not going to spoil like the...
I haven't.
It's a fucking biopic. Like look up his Wikipedia page. You'll know what happened. But anyway, Japan did not have a good time. Tell you that much. anyway.
Okay.
But anytime there's an explosion, it was so fucking loud. And like they would also build up to it. Like, you know, in a horror movie, they've got the music and it's building up. They're building up to, and I was like, oh, fuck, there's going to, and by the end, I was like, there's going to be a, I'm like gripping the side of the seat.
You're gonna explosion.
Your ears are going to fucking bleed. It was so goddamn loud. Anyway, that's not what I want to talk. I want to talk about the three sex scenes in Oppenheimer.
There's three.
One of them is kind of like, I don't want to say a flashback, but it's almost like a vision that somebody's having. So it's not a real sex scene. It's like an addition to a normal scene. It's weird. But anyway, the sex scenes are like, they feel gratuitous and also like rushed at the same time because it's already a 3-hour movie and like you didn't need the, like they were, they did. The story was not dependent on like these people fucking.
I don't know that you ever in any movie need like a gratuitous sex scene. I think that's a different thing altogether. I think like you can imply it. And I'm not saying I'm against it, but like I've also had experiences watching any films where I'm like, oh, they're still going. Like, okay, I get it. They're doing the deed.
And so in the first one, you know, they're kind of like flirting at a party and then instant cut. She's like fully riding them. And you're like, oh, hell yeah.
Alicia, wake up. Hey, babe. Hey, yeah. Babe, are you seeing this? Whoa.
She did fall asleep during the second one and I woke her up and she like opens her eyes and she's like, what the fuck?
We're watching a smut film. All right.
But anyways, so.
Is that what that means? Is that what smut means?
Yeah. Like, yeah. Smut.
Dirty. Smut.
But so there's the first one. She's riding them. They finish. They've they've achieved climax at the same time.
Kenji Taimu.
Yeah. First of all, unrealistic. Anyway, the girl gets off the bed and she goes and she's going through his books. So he's laying there like naked. She's walking around naked. And she's like, oh, you've got all these interesting books. And she was a communist. So she's talking about communism and the books that he reads. And she grabs a book and she's like, this is in Sanskrit. And he's like, yeah. And she gets back on him and she opens the book and she's like, read to me. And so he starts reading and they start doing it again. And I was like, like few criticisms.
So two of the three are back to back, or is this one continual?
This one continuous scene.
Interesting.
And I was like, few criticisms. First of all, no way he was ready to go out like that quick.
Yeah, fiction.
Yeah.
He's asleep. He's already got 9 Twizzlers in his mouth. He's got YouTube on.
got a glass of water.
The movie theater is shaking with deafening fart noises now because he's out.
She's facing the bookcase and he's laying on the bed behind her and she turns around and he's gone to get like a Mountain Dew.
Yeah, Baja Blast. Hell yeah.
That's more realistic. So
this movie's fake.
Yeah, and then the second one, they do it. And then they are sitting, kind of as we are right now, but we're fully clothed.
Do you have any Sanskrit novels?
No, I don't.
Okay.
They're sitting fully naked in like 2 leather chairs talking to each other.
Because we could spice it up.
Yeah, we could. Just really, really explicit podcast. And they're just sitting there naked talking to each other on these leather chairs. And I was like, that's not what you do. Like and that made me think, like, am I having sex wrong where I'm not sitting like having like a post-coitus conversation with my wife?
Undoubtedly you're doing it wrong, but for other, like, probably other reasons.
Oh yeah, no, I know I'm doing it wrong.
Yeah,
but I just felt like, I felt very undignified. I felt like this is how like smart professors have sex. It's like they do it and then like the actual climax is the intelligent conversation they have afterwards.
They're like watching their ticker tapes, smoking like super long cigars, like Cruella de Vil.
It was strange. Yeah.
Interesting. So
the sex scenes, I was like, could have done without those. And like the character was like, I guess kind of important, but like she wasn't that important to the story. She definitely showed like some of his character flaws, but it wasn't like, oh man, like without this, the atom bomb doesn't get made.
Without this Sanskrit smut. Okay, so that's one. That's one of three you said.
No, that was two. So the Sanskrit one was the first one, and then the second one is when they're sitting in the chair.
Ah, is when they're all elegant. Yeah. And yeah, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you said the third one was a flashback?
It's like a flashback to the one from when they are, before they're sitting on the chairs, when they're connected.
Huh.
Yeah.
And did it, like you're saying it didn't enhance in any way?
No, and I mean, it's already a 3-hour movie, so I'm like, you definitely take out those two scenes that are like not incredibly important to the story, and like you get your movie down to like a little more respectable timing. I don't know.
I feel like you could do it like Black Mirror or like kind of like Final Destination style, where like you watch the movie and then it just puts a link on the bottom. They're like, if you want to check this out later, like this was a scene you could be into.
Yeah.
Because you told me we were going to talk about Oppenheimer. Specifically the sex scenes. And I was like, I haven't seen the movie. I'm going to have this out of context. But I was like, I bet you I could go on like Mr. Skin. I could go. And I didn't. But I was like, these already exist online. I could find these. I could
probably.
Get, yeah.
Probably. You might have to wait for the like Blu-ray release.
Oh.
So somebody can download it onto the internet.
I'm going to get the Sanskrit edition. We can watch it together.
Yeah. And I'll be honest, like if you are going just for the sex scenes, like there's free stuff on the internet you can watch. It's going to be a lot more fulfilling.
That was kind of the vibe I was getting. You're like, you seen Oppenheimer? I'm like, no, not yet. You're like, the sex scenes. I'm like, really? Explosions loud. Sex scenes long.
Yeah.
Complicated.
B-. Okay, everybody else loved the movie. I'm like, this is a little loud.
Yeah. What's your review? What's your Rotten Tomato?
It was actually really good. I give it a 8.5 out of 10.
Because I watched Tenet, and that was like, or Tenet. Yeah. And I remember when that movie was coming out, it was like kind of like at the start of COVID, I think.
Yeah.
And like, we're coming off of Interstellar, and I'm like so hype, you know, the Batman trilogy, the Dark Knight trilogy. I'm like, oh, Nolan can't miss. He can't miss. And I did not understand that movie at all. My brother liked it, but I was like, this is fucking kooky. There's, you know, and then what was after that? What was his big wartime epic before Oppenheimer?
Did he do, what is it? Like, was it 1914 or?
No, that's that one's the one that's like a single shot the entire film. Yeah. This is like, they're on like the beaches of Normandy and they have to like escape. What is that called?
Dunkirk.
Yeah. Is that Normandy? I don't think so.
No, that's when they had to basically retreat from the Germans and it was like they were getting pinned down and they had to do this huge evacuation.
Yeah, how many sex scenes in that one?
I don't know. I remember starting to watch that movie and then Alicia was like, I don't really want to watch like a violent war movie before bed. So we read Sanskrit instead. Wink, wink.
And then we had an intelligent conversation. Oh, okay. So yeah, go see Oppenheimer.
Yeah, I mean, it was good. Anyway, there's Dexy's Movie Reviews.
Play that Dexy's Movie Reviews jingle you've been working on. Yeah. Come on. No, I see a little glint in your eye. You're like, I might have to whip one up. Well, here it is, guys.
Unforgettable dramas, timeless classics, hilarious comedies, award winners you'll never forget. Dexy's Movie Reviews, Oppenheimer, earns a score of 9 farts out of 10.
But okay, we got a real topic.
Well, okay, and we didn't really have a segue, but you were talking about
prior. You know what would have been better than Dexy's Movie Reviews is like an actual little hit for like what we're actually about to talk about.
Well, you were saying that you had taken your movie experiences at Landmark, no to Cineplex.
Right. Yeah, Cineplex is filled with rats and pedophiles.
Man, this is the red band version, if that's even possible. But you were saying you take Kennedy to the movie theater to like, you know, watch a bunch of kid movies. That's the vibe.
Yeah.
And I know that your oldest daughter is going into grade school.
Kindergarten,
man. Yeah, Kindergarten Cop.
Yeah.
So we're going to do a Kindergarten Cop special edition podcast here. And we actually have a guest. We're joined tonight by the ghost of Elizabeth May. So
she's not going to say anything.
Yeah, she's more.
She's here with us all the time.
Yeah, she's more of a poltergeist. It's very spooky.
She's reorganizing our recyclables if we misorganize them.
Oh, like, yeah.
You can't put old pizza boxes in recycling.
Yeah, what are you going to do? Haunt us. But yeah, I was thinking about like, cause it's a time of year and obviously with my job, going back into it, like it's the start of school. It's the end of summer. It's always seems earlier and earlier than it used to be, you know? Mm-hmm. Like I feel like back in the day you go back in September, maybe that's a thing. I don't know if it's creeped up or it's always been an August thing.
I always felt like it was after the September long weekend and then it became a trend of like getting one day in. And I can kind of understand that, like, it's just a throwaway bullshit day, right? Like you're not accomplishing anything. You're getting some like housekeeping out of the way. Kids are like learning where their classrooms are. So it's like, let's get one day out of the way, send kids back for the weekend. And then we can do our first full week is like a proper week.
The long weekend, right? Yeah. Before then. And like, I hear that a lot from parents and from other friends with kids, like the ridiculousness of doing it that way, like kind of lost days. And again, I'd stand to be corrected. I can't remember when we used to go back to school, but there's kind of two modes of thought. There's kind of two perspectives there. And the one nowadays is a soft start. So like it gives teachers the ability to get into the school, to get their systems, basically to get their ducks in a row and prepare for what they're about to do and like hit the ground running. But also even when kids get to school nowadays, like we go slow and it's about like socialization. You know, and I think this came out some Scandinavian country. Like you gotta get them in, get them feeling comfortable and safe, and then like prime them to learn. So that's one aspect of it. But like say in a high school, they're still mandated for like a certain number of hours that equate to learning. So each kid actually has to be in their high school course for 125 hours. It's called the Carnegie Unit. And so sometimes the school just has to like be in session to give those kids the credits from the, you know, government of Alberta, education, like they have to have 125 hours of learning in that course to receive high school credit. So it's like, it's literally what you said about like, get this day in there. So it's on the calendar. We have to hit our buck 90 so that we can like actually say these kids did it, which is insane because like time does not equate to learning. Like there's a lot of things that I could do for a million hours and have no clue. You know, like be good at sex, read Sanskrit, have intelligent conversations. Like, it doesn't matter. I spend as much time banging my head against the wall. It's not a real thing. But there are some like tangible reasons as to why it starts. And I'm going off on a tangent. Obviously, this is like what I do. But so Kennedy's starting school. It's back to school special. The rad dads go to school. Back to school.
Back to school.
Back to school to prove to dad that I'm not a fool. So what was on the school supply list? Like, what are the types of things you're doing to get your daughter ready? And like, is it jazzing you up? Are you reminiscing about the times like we would go back to school? What was that like?
I should have brought Alicia on for this podcast because like she got the supply list and bought everything off said supply list. I
did take Kennedy some stuff
back to school shopping for like some clothes last weekend.
Yeah,
so like
yeah.
That's always a throwback. But like I still don't know what day she actually starts. So like she's going to, you know, the elementary school near our house here. And I went on their website.
Which you and I both attended.
We both attended, yeah. I went on their website. And it's like, we're doing staggered entry. So half the school's going to go in on August 31st and half is going to go on September 1st, right? So they're not just throwing every kid in there all at one day. Probably more hands on deck teachers and stuff to help guide kids to their classrooms and shit. And so it says these 2 days. And when you click on it for more information, it says to find out what day your child is going back to school or what day there is their staggered entry day, please call the administration office at the school. I was like, okay. So I called like a week ago or a week and a half ago. And the voicemail is like, we're out until August 23rd. We'll be happy to answer your voicemails or messages then. And I was like, okay, word. So I called back today and it's still, we'll be back on August 23rd. But if you're wondering when your kid has to go to school for staggered entry, please go to the website. And if I will redirect you to my comments 30 seconds ago, the website directs you to call the school. So it's just an infinite
you're getting run around loop. Yeah, heck yeah.
And I'm just like, when does my fucking kid go to school? Like, it starts next week, minute, like less than a week from today.
Yeah,
I'm like, so when do I have to have my fucking kid there, please? Just like, that's all I want to know.
And can I bring them now?
Drop her off now. So that's like, that's me being like on the parental side of things. And I think when we were kids, everything happens so smoothly, right? Your parents get the supply list. They go out, they buy all the shit. You just show up day one with like new shoes, new clothes, new fucking pencils. And you're just like, oh, this is sweet. But in the background, your parents are like doing all this legwork to get you ready for like another year of learning. And in kindergarten, obviously, you know, she's doing full day kindergarten. So it's kind of a different program. There's a lot of, you know, your standard kindergarten for half the day. Then the other half of the day is more like play and socializing. And so she's got to buy a whole year of stuff. So we're buying like a year's supply of Play-Doh and a year's supply of like crayons. And it goes into like the communal basket. And they specify what brands to buy.
That's so when I was talking about like reminiscing, I remember the lists and getting in. And it seemed it was obscene. It was like a lot of stuff.
It's a lot of money. Yeah.
A lot of money, a lot of stuff. And also like your experience as a student, you know, like I remember going and you get everything on the list, right? You get like 5 stacks of loose leaf. You get graph paper. You get coil bound notebooks. You get like smaller notebooks. You get those 5-star binders, pencils, whatever. Then there's a bunch of stuff that your mom's not going to get you because you don't need it. You don't need any of it. And I was trying to think back. I was actually looking up, like I couldn't find like an old list, but I was thinking like, what are some of the things that were on the list back in the day? And one that I kind of had a chuckle at was, do you remember the like Avery, like circular adhesive stickers that were to repair pieces of loose leaf?
Yeah.
And you get like a box of 1,000. And so like what's implied there is that like a kid's gonna like accidentally tear a piece of loose leaf and then be like, oh no, like I need to repair this, and like take it out of their binder, like put the little hole on there perfectly, and then like, you know, they've made it, they've improved the structural integrity so it can remain in their binder. And I just like had a flashback to my like binder missing the top flap.
Yeah.
And like every unit, social, science, English, doesn't matter, just like wedged in, like, or like stuffed to the back of the desk. All those stickers were just like on the walls of the bathroom or like underneath my desk, chewing them up and spitting them at people. It made me think, I was like, well, how much stuff did we have to buy or still have to buy that's just like, this is ridiculous. These kids don't need this.
Yeah. And well, and like, it's funny because we buy all this stuff for like kindergarten. And when you go to high school, I don't particularly, I mean, at that point you should know what you need. but it's like you just show up with like a pen and a binder and some paper and you're like, this should be good.
When I got to high school, they were already like, you need Jesus.
We have no supply list for your needs.
You can't go out and buy what you need. Oh my God. It's crazy. I can't believe, and probably my kids, but your kid is definitely going to like our old school. And we're obviously treading lightly. I mean, our friends listen to this, but like I work for the division. So I'm trying to be like as on the line as possible. But I think it's interesting that like Kennedy's going to be walking the hallways and she's going to see like your school pictures.
Yeah.
And be like, that's my dad. Which one? In the Umbro.
Full tracksuit.
With the bowl cut.
He wore the same thing till grade 9.
And the blonde. And the blonde. Actually, you know what? That's not my dad. That's my dad. That looks like the teacher. No, that's my dad. Yeah. Just
pointing at like some guy from the year is like 1982.
Yeah.
I'm like not even born yet. Yeah.
Yeah. How old are kids before they start getting embarrassed of their parents? When does that happen?
I think for my kid, it's already started happening.
It's over now. Yeah. My parents always like blew their wad. They always, did the old Sanskrit shuffle on the school supplies. And then there was like never any money for clothes. And I don't know if that's not true. I don't want to be like, I'm coming from, impoverished home. Definitely not the case. But I think maybe there's some prioritizing there. And my mom was definitely a bargain shopper. So when I think of like going back to school, specifically elementary, it's like the ridiculous things you buy that I'm like, as a kid, I'm like, I'm going to wreck this immediately. I'm probably not going to make it to school. Like I'm pretty sure I opened up a couple things of loose leaf on the way to school, like just making ridiculous stuff. But I always laugh at like getting new clothes because like new clothes to me was like my mom buying me clothes. And that was always a mortifying experience because it was like the worst Winners Payless shoes. Like I got the dustiest stuff and it was like always so like clearly new. And it's like, wow, you got like all this new horrible. Like I think about my kids, I'm going to buy them in terms of like style. We've talked about clothes and stuff like that and what we're going to do for like, I'll buy them whatever they want.
So that's a perfect segue into like our weekend shopping at Cross Iron Mills. It was like, my wallet was open for my child and I had a similar experience to you where like, again, I don't come from poverty. Like my family did pretty well. We weren't rich, but like they could afford shit. But my mom is also like very frugal. And so I was not wearing Nikes. I was not wearing Adidas. I wasn't even wearing Pumas. All right. I was wearing like whatever was on sale at like the Sport Check tent sale.
Oh, yeah.
I'd be like, oh, mom, I specifically remember, like, I think it was grade 7 when, like, skate shoes were the shit. Like, just those horribly ugly, giant.
Big pillows, marshmallows.
Yeah. I was like, I want either these DCs or Osiris shoes. And my mom was like, those are $120. Absolutely not. You can get the Airwalk, like, knockoff ones for $30.
Like I picture my mom walking in the store and there's like the Osiris rack and like the skater hoodies rack, World Industries t-shirts. And then it says like a big banner. It's like, it says like, boys clothes, girls clothes, like probably nowadays, just like clothes for children, non-binary, whatever. Right. And then like my mom would look around and she'd find the one that said like, your kid's a fat idiot, no friends. And like, that's like, cause you go into that section, like a lot of horizontal stripes, a lot of Bugle Boys with that. We already talked about the hammer handle. Yeah. And then like the shoes killed me, man. Cause shoes were such a status symbol.
Yeah.
And everyone notices your shoes. And my mom would get like, I get a kick when I see kids now. Cause some of these brands have like kind of come back. Like Champion is cool.
Yeah.
And like Brooks is kind of cool. But like when we were kids, like Brooks was not cool.
No.
And like bright white Fila's were not cool.
Yeah.
And my mom was like, oh, I got 6 pair.
Get you through the whole school year. Maybe next one. Yeah. And so the contrast to that is like, I'm vividly remembering like having flashbacks to like trying on the worst shoes and just being like, they hurt my feet, mom, just like anything to like not get her to buy them for me. And she's like, I don't fucking care. And then my daughter, I'm like, took her to the Nike store and we're trying on Nikes and she's like, I like these ones. And I was like, okay. And they didn't have her size, so we go to the next one, we're trying on Adidas and stuff, and I'm like looking at it and I'm like, these are like $64.99 a pair for like shoes that she might not even like. The way she's growing, she might wear these till Christmas. And then they're going in the closet till Kaylee's old enough to wear them 4 years from now. But that's just my vibe. It is, I'm like, wallet's open, baby. Like, let's get those Nikes. Let's get those Adidas. Like, whatever you want.
Yeah, because that is going to pay dividends. It really is.
Oh, yeah.
Like, kids are like they can be mean little people. And they definitely, identify status symbols. You know, that's a big part of it. And you're like, I'll give my kid every advantage. Yep. You can have like whatever, you know, like, and if I have to buy a new pair, you know, I think my parents, you know, and again, I'm not putting them on blast, but like, it is funny to think back. And I think it's a very Canadian thing, but even like sports equipment, my dad was like, I used to work at a sports store and like the norm was you would go in and kids would try on 10 pairs of skates and then you'd pick like the top three and you get them to walk around in them. And then they get them molded to their feet. We'd sharpen them. And then back in 4 months because they grew out of them. And my dad was like, you look to be about a 6. So I'm going to get you these size 10 and you can wear them for a while. I picked them up for you.
Yeah.
You know, like put them in the bath. They'll suck up nice and tight. You know, like it was definitely a different era. And like, I'm going to do what you're going to do or are doing. So that the kids, they can be cool. I can buy them that. I can buy them coolness for a bit.
And also in the grand scheme of things.
I can make them vain. And narcissistic.
I don't even think it's that, right? Like
superficial, maybe not narcissist. Yeah, They'll learn that down the road.
But for me, it's like, I'm also like, how do I justify not spending $65 on like a really nice pair of shoes for my daughter when like the day before I went out golfing and had like, you know, paid like $77 for my round, had a few beers, had a lunch. I'm like, I just spent like $140 on a hobby. Yeah. Yesterday,
and my daughter needs
nice shoes. You know what I'm gonna buy? So like, how do I look her in the eye and be like, "Oh, sorry, like those ones are a little too pricey." And then like, just thinking back to like not even 24 hours earlier, when I'm on my third beer on a Friday afternoon. Like, yeah, no, I can't do that. I can't lie to my kid like that.
Good for you. You're a good man. It's funny. I rationalize those things the same way. I'm like, well, you know, like, is this really where I'm going to cut corners? Like I've made some pretty poor financial decisions in my day. Yeah, right? Like, I'm just like sending my kid to school. I'm like, here you go, honey. I frauded the Telus store and you've got $800 to Swiss Chalet.
You're so having your birthday party at Cineplex. Invite maybe, your whole class.
Maybe you can trade up. I got you a collectible Oppenheimer cup from the movie theater. I got you
$250 in Swiss Chalet gift cards.
What else? What other school supplies or like things from school do you look back on now that are kind of like insane? One that comes to mind for me that I looked up and like, I think it's like a bit of a Mandela effect. I expected to find something like nefarious and awful and like mind bending about it. And it turned out to be like a total, like it was totally fine. But do you remember like Mr. Sketch markers?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I always thought that was kind of an insane concept in hindsight where they're like, we're going to give you these like markers in washable and non-washable, like permanent style. And like the intention is yes, to color and to draw, but more so is to like smell them aggressively. To like put these, like, in fact, don't listen to your teacher. Don't engage in the lesson. I want you to put these up your nostrils and I want you to sniff them at length. And I want you to sniff them so much that you're like, what do these taste like?
Does it
taste as grapey? Why is there the black one and the brown one that are horrible smells? Like, who wants a black licorice and like a gross, what's the brown ones, like the cinnamon? Remember that? Like cinnamon hearts?
Yeah.
It's horrible.
I wonder how many kids like that was a gateway to them huffing like actual paint and like.
Well, and what are you teaching them? So the kid moves on from Mr. Sketch and gets his hands on some Sharpies and he's like, oh,
that's burning the front of my brain. But it's so good. Oh,
leveled up. Like we really taught him some like some bad stuff.
I wonder what happens if I pour gas into a bag and do this.
So I looked it up. I looked to the point of like looking up the material safety data sheet and like was like going through and I was like, there got to be like chloroform in these fucking things. Like there's got to be something bad. And it like turns out like, no, apparently Mr. Sketch has like checked their boxes and like
that's reassuring,
I guess. Not selling toxic poison. But I do think, and I think, you know, maybe just trying to make this bit work, it's a weird thing to be like, here is a tool, but most importantly, smell it a lot. Get it in your nose and get sniffing.
Do you remember the like ridiculously expensive graphing calculators we would buy?
I do, and I think...
And then we would hack them and put games on them?
Oh, cause kids nowadays, this is going to date us. But there's a lot of listeners right now. There's 40 to 60 listeners right now that are going to be like, oh, hell yeah, because we didn't have smartphones. Like, my first cell phone, I think it was like a Nokia Flip, and like I think I was 16, man. So like to have your TI-83 with Block Dude, with Snake, with like any like Tetris.
Yeah.
Like that was math. That was math.
What was the one where you like could sell drugs?
What?
There was a game where you could sell drugs.
Oh, you leveled up. You got the Mr. Sketch sniffers, man. I don't know.
I can't even remember it, but I can't even remember playing this because I don't even think I had it on my calculator, but it was on somebody else's, and like we gathered around their desk one math class, and they were literally like selling drugs and upgrading, like buying guns and shit.
And this like engaging in commerce. They probably learned more from that game.
Oh yeah.
I didn't have that one. I think the one I played the most of was like Block Dude. Block Dude was a good puzzle. You know, I remember because back then it was like math applied or math pure, and I was getting like 51 in math pure. And then like I remember the teacher very specifically, and I can't name names. One, I work there. Two, they still teach there. Okay, so use your imagination. But I remember being like explicitly told in the 11th grade, you are not to take math pure again. Like you're done. You need to go to applied. When you fail that, you need to go down one more to knowledge and employability. Like I said, you need Jesus, buddy. And I remember going to the counselor and like relaying that info because you like sign up for classes. You remember doing that? Like, yeah, what do you want to be in next year? You gonna do physics? No. You gonna do bio? No. You gonna do chem? No. You wanna do science 20? Ooh, do they talk about space? Yeah.
Is this the easy way out?
I'll do that twice. But I remember going and being like, I'm not allowed to take math pure. And the counselor at the time was like, meh, whatever. And then like fast forward to math 30 pure. And now I've now upgraded my 51 to like a bona fide 50. And I'm like, I'm just playing Block Dude. So kids don't get like that was gaming. Like we had like Game Cubes and like Xbox, but like in class, you wanted to mess around. You're playing on your TI-83 and they're expensive fucking units, man.
They were. And it's funny now because the price of those has like really come down. I think because there's more competition on the market. But I remember actually taking math 10 pure, doing not great, but passing. Math 20 pure, again, not great, but passing. And then math 30 pure. And you and I were both doing very poorly. And our parents actually sent us to the same tutor.
We had to go to get tutored.
And the tutor fucking hated us. Like, do you remember the one day he looked at us and he was just like, you guys need to take this a little more fucking seriously. You're just not going to pass.
Yeah, like private two-on-one tutoring. I think three-on-one. I think Godzilla came with
Brad
us.
Brad came with us, yeah.
Yeah, and just like shutting us down and being like, you guys are idiots. You were so bad at math that your parents have like they've now seeked out extracurricular help. You're getting like private time, and like I hate you. You know, like you guys are so.
What can your teachers think that have to see you every day? Yeah,
oh,
no.
I remember. Oh, go
that
ahead.
Was such a like misstep on our parents' part, though, being like, "You need help," and I'm like, "My good friends Drew and Brad also need help in math. We should all go 3-on-1 with this poor fucking tutor." And like, who is a nice guy, pretty cool, but like, we just, that was our chance to practice our comedy with each other, like, after hours.
That's where the podcast started.
Yeah, this guy hated it. He was like, oh my God, you guys are not passed. And I did not pass math 30 pure. So semester one failed, semester two tried it again, failed again. And then the university I was going to was like, you need at least a 60 in your math 30, but it can be applied. And I was like, so I had to take math 30 applied in summer school. So I had to take math 30 three times and I needed 60. I got 62%.
Which is crazy to me because when I went to university, eventually down the road, pure and applied for my program, at least, were like interchangeable. And yeah. I felt really misguided. I was like, why was I in that fucking pure class? I could have just like probably had a better understanding of math, had a better time, and it would have been like as equitable when I went to go to school. And the other thing, just to touch on the tutoring and our parents, I hope that I don't, my parents say all the time, because we are like I feel like in this podcast when we're chatting, like I put them on blast a lot and they just kind of chuckle and they're like, you won't make the same mistakes that we made. But then they like kind of look at me, they're like, but you'll make new ones, you know, like, like, but you just wait. And I think this is, you know, it's going to be true. But they were willing at that point in time to like pay for a tutor for me to get math help, when if they had like just opened, remember you used to get those like printout math workbooks?
Yeah.
Like at the end of the semester, I would sell mine to someone the next semester because I had never even written my name in it. I had never once done homework, done the practice. I remember I had a teacher, I'd be like, I'm struggling with this problem. I probably didn't say it that nice. I probably threw a fistful of jelly bellies.
You suck at teaching.
You suck at teaching. I don't get this. And they're like, well, let's see how you did on your practice problems. And just like crispy pages. Like, well, here's your problem, Drew. You've never once done homework or engaged in any of the material. I think we found why you've got a 51 and shouldn't be in this class. So like my kids, like before I hire the tutor, I'm gonna be like, get me your homework.
I want to see what you've done.
I'm gonna talk to your teacher.
That's a fair move. I will say this, so like, you know, obviously it took me 3 ties to pass math 30. Hot take here, but like I work in the finance industry, and it may be alarming to listeners finding out that I couldn't pass grade 12 math without like serious additional help. Most math that you learn after grade 9 is like completely useless in the real world. Like there is just like, there is.
You ever soaked a toad? When have you ever used trig or any of that shit?
When have you ever had to like pull out your graphing calculator and know how to make like a proper bell curve on your graphing calculator? First of all, like now computers will do that shit for you anyway, right? And it's just not like an applicable skill to like 99% of people. Like there are some people, engineers who need like that advanced math and stuff. Mathematicians, I guess maybe like math 30 teachers, but those are the only people that actually need that. And I've always maintained, and I will maintain this forever, that like math after grade 9 should be almost like real world math, like personal finance and that kind of stuff. Like they should be rolling that in, like instead of learning how to use your graphing calculator that costs you $250, how can we teach you how to like balance a budget?
See, I don't think it's funny because, you know, I've got the perspective of being an educator, and I think the way it's presented too, like when you're graphing something, so take like linear equations, it's a process by which you can verify your answer. So say you're doing algebra and you get an answer. And if you're the type of student at that age who's like, I want to confirm, I want to verify whether or not this is correct, I'll graph it. And if it's like an unbroken pattern, you know, it makes a line that does not repeat with its points. It's like, you've just demonstrated that it is in fact true. It does work. But like, I didn't know that. I didn't know that's what I was doing. I had no fucking clue.
I'm learning that right now.
Yeah. You know, like, and it's crazy because like, just like you said, there's so much other math that I probably could have used. However, I do have a contrarian opinion to that. And my own take on like my secondary school experience is that it didn't matter. It didn't matter what class I was in or how it was presented to me. I just wasn't in that space. And I think when you're talking about like, oh, I'm a financial advisor now, I'm very successful, I'm actually really good at math, I do it every day in my job.
Oh, I'm still not good at math, just to clarify with everybody.
Okay, well, okay, for the sake of this argument, you're
okay, yeah. No, actually, I am.
You're good at math. But I think like I was, because I went to college after, and like I had to take like high school courses at Mount Royal. And I actually tell this to students all the time. And I'm like, it will come back. You know, like your education in high school is subsidized by the government. And when you turn 21, it's not. So all these courses that the government's paying for, if you want to pass them and like advance your learning to the point of where you're going to a post-secondary institution of higher learning, whatever you want to call it, you have to have that stuff. But if you don't, you have to pay for it. I failed, just like you're talking about math, I failed chemistry 30 3 separate times. The difference was I failed it as an adult man and had to pay. It was like $450, $500, you know, nowadays it's probably $700-$800. And that's what finally got to me. Like I was 22 years old. I'd like failed a bunch of courses at Mount Royal, going nowhere fast. And it just like all of a sudden I kind of like had an epiphany, and I was like, I think I want to do this. I think like this is where I want to be in life, this is the job I want, this is the lifestyle I want. And I was just motivated to not be like a total piece of shit. And so I promptly removed my head from my ass, applied myself, got these things done. And when we moved to Lethbridge to go to school, I was like a changed man. I was literally considering going to Lethbridge and getting a job as a janitor and just telling my parents I was in school and being like, all the tuition's cash, you just have to give it to me. You know, like I was like, it was a bad state. And then when I was motivated to actually like achieve something, I got there. And what I think now when I look back is that you couldn't have reached me at 18, 19. And I think it's this system, this factorial system we have where like we just socially promote kids. Oh, you're older now, you're in the next grade. Like, oh, you did this course, you now have to do this course. You know, it's a prerequisite. You know, like you've been in school where you're in a class of kids and the spectrum, the difference of abilities, like when you talk about like age-based learning, take a grade eight class, like your smartest kid in a grade eight class is like a gifted student that can probably do much more complicated.
They could do grade 11.
Yes. But in that same class, your kid on the other end of the spectrum, like they can't read. And I'm serious, and they're in the same space. They take the same classes. Like I think it's a huge question, and I won't go down this massive rabbit hole, but I do think there was never a time that I was going to do high school successfully. And I think that applies to a lot of young people where, you know what, you will or you won't, but you might later in life when you find the motivation. But I don't think you can force a kid with his two buddies who's never opened a workbook going and like absolutely tormenting a tutor that their parents have paid for without realizing the kid's never even been to class, you know? Like, I think like that's just, it's gonna happen, you know? Like,
I will say that tutor drove like a really nice car. I feel like, didn't he have like a nice Mustang, like a newer model Mustang?
Yeah, I know the dude. I still know him. He's a good dude.
He is a good dude. He's a great guy. You know what's funny is like, he took it so seriously and he was like kind of hard on us just because I think he knew that like, we obviously were not applying ourselves. But like afterwards, when we're walking out the library, he's like, he was just a chill, like talking to us, joking with us. So you could tell like he took his job seriously. But when it was like no longer time for work,
yeah,
he was a bro. He was cool. And I feel like he was like trying really
hard to reach us. Great educator. He was trying to kind of, how do I reach these kids? Yeah.
I think his biggest frustration, honestly, was like, and he said this to our faces, like, your parents are paying for this.
Yeah.
They're paying for my time to be here. He's like, I'm getting paid no matter what. He's like, you need to just like he was just so frustrated. He's just like, I just want to help you. And we're like quoting Anchorman. Whatever Judd Apatow movie was popular at the time.
What was in vogue? Well, the thing is, you know, we're past that now and we're both very reputable, responsible adults.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. Things have changed. So anyway, yeah, back to school.
Back to school. I guess my thing is like the part of Alicia and I were actually just having this conversation. When your kid goes to school, it is like 90% education, and this is me being like optimistic, and like 10% like childcare. Like, this is where I'm sending my kid every day. And it, for a lot of parents, it's probably like more like,
oh, not
10%.
I would flip that. Like, we were talking about the school calendar. Like, we get blown up. Like, what do you mean you're closed? What the fuck am I supposed to do with this kid?
Yeah. But I've thought about that, and Alicia and I were having that discussion. I'm very blessed to have like a very flexible job where, you know, I'm going to be like super dad dropping, Kennedy off the front door every day and picking her up at the end of the day at the last bell and, you know, work from home the last couple hours of the day or something like that. But I look at the schedule and I look at, again, we're less than a week out from her potential first day and we still don't know what day she's going. A lot of parents don't have that flexibility and like school can like really throw a wrench in some of that. I'm like, how would somebody that doesn't have a flexible job, if they're finding out like 3 days before their kid goes to school, I mean, you know that they're probably going this day or that day, but yeah, it's just, it's almost seems like something that like, it takes over your, it's an extra scheduling thing that takes over a chunk of your life. Yeah. That was an interesting thought or conversation that we had where it was just like, how would other people do this that have a typical 9-to-5? And in Okotoks, you know, obviously a lot of people drive into Calgary. So you got a 9-to-5, you got to drive into Calgary, somehow hopefully get your kid to and from school. I know there's school buses for that, but.
No, and I think, you know, like it's an interesting question. And I think you and I are both very fortunate that we probably complain more than we ever have the right to, especially considering our circumstances and what we're able to do for our kids and what our families do for our children. And we haven't really been in that position, but I think it is, I know it is, it's super difficult. But the inherent value there is that you're socializing your child and preparing them for like this absolutely zany world that like no one knows which way is up or where it's headed. And so like it's important, like you, that's an investment. I think that's, maybe you can rationalize it that way. Again, that I'm making it sound easy. I'm not like I have to work my shift here to like afford school, to afford my kids fucking Heelys, which are going to give them like crazy back problems. But like, I want them to be cool. You know, they're gonna Heely off the side of a garbage can and like snap their femur. But like, everyone's gonna talk about it.
They'll be a legend.
They'd be legends. So, yeah, no, it's crazy that we're at that period of time in our lives that we're thinking
like
about that type of stuff.
Not that long ago, like we're vividly recalling our interactions with our tutor from when we were in school, and now I have my kid going into school.
I remember remember junior high, the hypest thing, the thing you wanted to do most was find out what class you were in.
We did that together.
Yeah, and who was in your class. You would, like, they would post that shit, like, a day or 2 days before the first day, and you'd, like, make the pilgrimage up to the school and be like, who's in my class? And sometimes it was like, oh, no way, like... I'm still sitting here right now, a little bit of like jealous rage, green with jealousy. You always had like the dudes in your class.
Well, sometimes. So the first, my grade 7 year, when I, and this was like, I went there, and again, they posted on the window.
Yeah.
Outside of OJ.
Yeah, right outside the office, yeah.
And I look at, and I'm like, how big is my fucking class? Because there was literally 50 kids.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was a new experimental thing where it was like a double class. And so that what the concept was that you had these kind of group tables. So you didn't have your own desk. You had 5 kids per table. And they had strategically set it up so that, you know, some kids were identified as like leaders. And I'm using air quotes because this is what they told my mother. And they were like, you know, your son, he's a leader. He can motivate people around him, so we need him. But then the other, you were talking about the spectrum. So the, who am I leading? Well, some of the most fucking sawed off humans that have ever fucking existed in the town of Okotoks. There was some weird shit that I'm not going to get into things, and you know, people were kids and they did, but there's like some things that happened in that classroom that are just like, who the fuck am I going to school with? Like,
oh, what's, yeah, listen to the After Hours podcast. Oh, yeah. I remember some of that stuff for
and
sure.
They were like, they had 3 teachers to the room and one educational assistant. And so there's like 4 adults in the room. But again, there was like 52 kids in this one classroom. And so it was like, and it was literally the first year that they did that. And I hated it. Like, there were some great people in that classroom and like, you know, probably helped develop me into the person I am today, whatever. There was just, again, a lack of attention. And especially if you are expected to be a leader in that room for your peers, there are people that are going to need far more attention than you will. And then in grade 8, they did the same shit. And I went back and I was like, fuck, I'm in the double class again. But grade 8 was way cooler because like that Brad was in my class.
Yes, that's what I was like, basically it was the Zilla draft. I was, yeah, like, you got to hang with Brad.
I got to hang with Brad every day. And so that was cool. But I remember telling my mom after like grade 8, I was like, if they put me in a double class for grade 9, I'm not going to school anymore. Like, I'm just not. I
drop out.
Yeah. I was like, I can't do it. Like, I can't sit
what
there.
What might have
like,
been?
Yeah. I could have been a grade 9 dropout. And so, yeah, then I got put into a normal classroom and it was much more traditional. So I don't know. I liked that better personally, like just a smaller class size. And really, actually, in the double class with how many teachers they had, there was more teacher per student.
Ratio. I think it was funny you said that. And I was like, oh, that's crazy to hear your perspective on how it was like a mishmash. And like, maybe I don't want to put words in your mouth or even like, you know, draw conclusions of an experiment that I was not a part of. But like when you talk about high yield strategies in education, like one of the greatest yields is ratio. You know, like when we talk about the number of kids to adults in the space, you know, like I have a 50-minute class and if it's just me in there and I have, you know, 32-33 students, we're talking about a minute and a half per student. And that's a gross generalization, but seriously, you're supposed to like observe them, provide them with feedback, assess them, guide them, like and there's obviously a lot of strategies to help you do that. But like what would be really different you know, you want to change the game up. You want to reach these kids. Don't have anybody falling through the cracks. Give me 20. Mm-hmm. Give me 1 to 20. And then, and you know, so nowadays you have those kids in those huge classes that have, you know, complex needs, big behaviors, and they draw more of your time. And that was the same back when we were kids. Like, you know, you have kids in junior high and high school who are wiling out, that draw the attention of the teacher.
Yeah.
I remember one of my favorite, actually probably the favorite story that I heard from high school. I was not involved. It sticks out when I think of like the greatest achievements. Dan, not Dunny, but Dan R, you know, freedom of information, had it on good authority that another student was skipping. And it was like, it was a big thing for this other student who had like never skipped class. It had not tasted the fruit of freedom as I so often and many people in high school.
I had like, you can just 200 not, plus absences in my grade 12 years.
Oh, what an epiphany. You're just like, wait, I can just not go? And like, they'll leave a pre-recorded message on my parents' landline that I can delete. Like, wait, this is optional? Yeah, like just mind-boggling. So it's one of these students who like, this is a big thing, a lot of pageantry involved. Like, we're going to skip. You know, we're gonna do like a skip day. And so, I don't know if you know this story.
It's not ringing a bell.
I guess I won't use last names, but Miles was the kid, and Miles skipped. And it was like a big thing. And what Dan did was, there was a substitute teacher in English class on that day, and Dan went to class and pretended to be Miles and like went off. Like took his shirt off in class, like flipped the desk, was like screaming, like, it's too late for me. Like, so, and like, so Miles like gets this phone call to be like, you know, from the administration being like, your son like took his clothes off and flipped desks and like absolutely berated a substitute teacher, ran out of the building screaming, like, it was a real thing. And so his parents are like, you know, like, what, Miles? And he's like, no, like, I wasn't in class. And they're like, what?
He's just admitting to a lesser crime.
Yeah, so he got booked for skipping. And then, Dan got found out for putting on the impersonation of a lifetime. But, like, I think about that, and I'm like, that is movie quality.
Oh, that's amazing.
I wish I had the clarity at that age to pull off a stunt like that. Like, oh, he's not here, and they have a sub? I'm going to go pretend to be him. Because you pull that shit, the sub teacher, like, is Dex here? And then Drew puts his hand up like, yeah, I'm here. And I fart a bunch. You know, like, but just to go in and be like, yeah, I'm Miles. And I've got problems.
I remember in high school, we had, I took Spanish every year in high school as an option course. And did not learn a lot of Spanish. Let's just, I applied myself as well as I did in math.
Yeah, give me some Espanol.
No, I can't. You need to practice the language, and I barely practiced it while I was learning it. But our Spanish teacher, who like, she did a lot of like exchange teaching in different countries. And so she took like I don't want to say a sabbatical, because she was teaching in a foreign country for a year, but they had to be like, we need a teacher to teach Spanish. And like, that's very limited in Okotoks.
What do they call that? A seconded? Just secondant?
Yeah.
And went and worked somewhere else?
It was like an exchange teacher program. But
exchange,
like,
okay.
Yeah. And so they found a teacher to, like, they were like, you got to teach grade 11 Spanish. And she was like, I don't know Spanish. Like, the children know Spanish better than I do. And so like, she was learning Spanish, you know, as she's teaching.
The day before.
She's reading reading the textbook the night before.
Oh, yeah.
And so one day she would do things like classic. Like, I was like, this lady doesn't know Spanish. She's like, we're going to watch a Spanish movie. Again, you know, or like, we're going to, God bless her. She's such a nice teacher, but like, just didn't know Spanish. She's teaching Spanish. One day she's like, we're going to have, our favorite Spanish food day. And so, you know, it was hyped up, this, like, you got to make a dish. So people are making fucking paella and like nice Spanish dishes.
There you go. Yeah. Good pronunciation.
I forgot about the assignment. And so, you know, I saw some of my classmates in the morning. We had Spanish in the afternoon. In the morning, they've got their, like, tinfoil dishes of their paella and, like, all their delicious Spanish foods. And I was like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
So at lunchtime, ripped down the High River to Taco Bell and bought as many bought as many 99-cent tacos as I could, and my meal was a hit.
Oh, everyone was into it.
Like, oh, I want Taco Bell.
Very culturally enriching. Like, they have like an American fast food restaurant.
Yeah, it's like, that's continental. That's not even Mexican. Yeah. So that was like, just when you were talking about substitute teachers, like, she wasn't really a sub because she had to do the whole year. But yeah, she was just like, I've lost control of this child here. This little white kid that doesn't want to learn Spanish. Fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They call it, we don't even say substitutes anymore. We say guests. And like, a big part of it is to like, evoke the emotion of like, they're a guest in our school. Like, they need to be treated with respect. And like,
and they're still abused to the same degree.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's, I was guest teaching for a bit. And like, I did all right because I had taught, under contract for 5 years. And so like, I knew what I was getting into, and I kind of knew the games, and I played well. Like, I would come in and like get the kids on my side, and you know, you kind of have to let stuff roll off your back. You can't pick the battles, and like there's method to it, and you have people who do a really good job of it. But you see a lot of like new teachers, like that's the gig. When you like first graduate, you don't have anything under your belt and you just need employment. It's like, well, you can be basically like your reserve. You're gonna be a guest teacher. We'll call you in, and like, kids are just like great white sharks. They just smell fear, smell blood in the water, and it's just like, it's horrible. I like, many a times will be out of the building, and I will gutlessly bribe my kids with like candy and like, you know, like I'll take you to Sev. We'll get a Slurpee if I just get to come back and there's like notes from the guest teacher that you were well behaved. All in fact, not even that. You know what? I just don't want notes that you threw a chair at them. Like that is a gold star for you right now. Like, just please, please, please treat these humans. You know, I heard a funny joke the other day, and it was like, this generation of young people is the only group in history that will respect your pronouns, but not you as a human.
Yeah, that's probably pretty accurate.
Yeah. And I was like, I heard that, and I was like, yeah, stuff's pretty wild right now. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're going to send our kids into that.
Hey, well, you know what? It's a rite of passage. And actually, I was...
And as long as they're wearing cool shoes, as long as they've got Heelys and the newest Quicksilver and the fabric belts and Exco jeans, they are going to fly.
Yeah, they got to get the JNCOs.
Yeah.
I heard somebody talking, and it was like, they weren't an educator, but it was from the perspective of an educator. And it was very much like, you know, we are over-reliant on the education system. And so people send their kids into school thinking that they're going to come out like fully formed humans. And the thing is, like, the education system is there to give them like a baseline knowledge so that they can go like dig graves. Like, honestly, like, that's basically... What can you do with a high school education these days? Like, not a ton.
What, right? can you do with a post-secondary education these
Barely
days?
Barely anything. Like, yeah. So it's like, they were talking about parents need to like kind of take back some of that control and not like go question your teacher. But it's like, no, you were sending them for like the absolute minimum, and you need to find the extracurriculars that are going to turn them into the person that they need to be. If that's sports, if that's coding camp, if that's whatever, you need to actually like take a role. But parents have stepped even further away, I think. Like, there's so many people that are just so quick to blame teachers and shit like that, and it's like, no, like, they have a curriculum that they are following to teach your child. And if you want your child to like fucking be the next Mark Zuckerberg, well, I'm sorry, but the grade 3 teacher at local elementary is not teaching them how to like code at like an elite level. You need to find, if they have that passion, you need to pursue that outside of school, outside of like the base level that you are being provided for free from the government.
I'm doing a major tongue bite. I'm just like almost verbal diarrheaing, but I will, like, I'll abstain. I definitely have to toe the line. I agree with you. There is a lot of value in assuming those traditional roles as a parent. Like, it's your child. You have to be invested.
Yeah.
And, you know, and there isn't, you know, I think those institutions exist where, like, I'm going to ship my kid out to Saskatchewan to like go to a boarding school and like send them back and kind of fix them. You know, I think that like maybe that is a real thing, but it's definitely shifted. It's definitely shifted to be like, what is the role of that building versus like, what's the role in your home? You know, like you have to provide the stable and enriched environment, especially in terms of things like socialization and respect and like morality. Like that can be bolstered, that can be like improved upon and nurtured in a school setting. But you know, you don't send your kid to school to like teach them how to be like a good person.
Yeah.
You know, like you hope that happens, but like that also happens outside of the school. That's all I can say about it. Cause like, I love my community. I love my school. We got fantastic parents and, I'm really lucky to be where I am. But it's definitely like when I think about me as a parent, you know, like having seen both sides, I know that like, I'm going to have to look at their math 20 notebook before
and make sure it has been opened.
Yeah, before I call and put that professional on blast and before I go and hire a tutor, like, you know, like there's some work, there's some legwork.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a like excellent stopping point, because I feel like we just had a really intelligent discussion, and I would hate to like give anybody reason to think that we are anything but Sanskrit reading.
You think we just banged, man, you know, like sitting on leather couches. All right, man, we're going to open up a couple Sanskrit novels and get our extra long ciggies out.
Hell yeah.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning in. I will say that these two dads are both busy individuals, and we know that the summer, I wouldn't say it got away from us, but I'd say we prioritized our families and did things that were important to us, and we hadn't really hit the studio and been recording as much. But we are coming up in the next couple months on our 1 year anniversary, and we do have big plans for the podcast. So please do things like send us an email. Really, I know it's like begging, but like please, we love to read those out. We want to hear from you guys. So if you've ever pondered like whether you should, hit us at raddadredemptionpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Instagram and stay tuned for big things, because we're gonna continue to hit it.
Hell yeah. All right. Have a good one, everybody.
Peace.
In the next episode, the Rad Dads shave a guinea pig just to see how small he is under all that fur.